from the Duck South Studios in Morgan City, Mississippi.
I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
I want to punch you in the face so bad right now.
This is the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I didn't get a harumph out of that guy.
Get the governor a harumph.
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Today's episode is brought to you by Advantage Multi from Bayer. Advantage Multi is veterinarians' number one choice in the prevention of heartworms, fleas, roundworms, hookworms, and whipworms. Treats and controls sarcoptic mange. Make sure your dog is protected by using Advantage Multi.
I said what I said and I'll stand by it to the death.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
And now, here are your hosts, J. Paul Jackson.
You just love to hear yourself talk, don't you? Even when you're not saying anything.
Rocky LaFleur.
Yo, Adrian! Adrian!
Houston Kennedy.
Please, Houston, we have a problem.
And Josh Webb.
Coons! Well, raccoon's trying to get on our back porch. Mama just chased him off with a broom.
Welcome to the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com. I'm your host, J. Paul Jackson, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Rocky, I got really big hands and really big feet, LaFleur, and our special guest host this week, Mr. Brad Albeck from Oklahoma Albeck Adventures. Brad, great to have you on the show, brother.
Hey, thanks, J. Paul. Appreciate being here.
Yes, sir, and we got Rocky, too. And now, Rocky having big hands and big feet, you know what that means, don't you, Brad?
Probably he has big shoes and big gloves. You didn't think exactly. I'd fall for that old one, did you?
Good job, brother. Rocky, how are you today?
I'm good. That's what my wife would say, too.
Oh, man.
Man, we're off to a great start here already. Listen, everybody, the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com, is brought to you by Bayer Advantage Multi, the only heartworm preventative for dogs that is 100% effective against heartworms. We really do appreciate the folks at Bayer, too, making this possible for us. So before we get into it with Brad, Rocky, what'd you think about the Ole Miss game yesterday? Finally, we held on to a first half lead and knocked off a ranked team for the win.
Yeah, I think all the games went as I thought they would yesterday. Alabama won big, Ole Miss won big. Florida-Tennessee game kind of surprised me. I thought Tennessee would hold on to that game. LSU Auburn.
Did
what about
on.
That?
Tennessee.
Yeah,
did
I'm sorry, I messed up. I thought that Florida would hold on because they went into halftime 21-3 lead, and Tennessee came roaring back and kicked their tail.
Yeah, that was a shocker to me. I think the key was that Dobbs actually threw more TDs than INTs. I mean, that's been – and the same thing is true for Ole Miss yesterday, too. Chad Kelly did a really, really good job of protecting the ball and not just throwing the ball right into a defender's hands.
Yeah, I don't know if either one of you guys saw the ending to the LSU-Auburn game. Man, that was crazy.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, Auburn was winning 18-13. LSU drove the field, final seconds. The quarterback, okay, they had thrown a flag for a legal shift with 1 second left. So that stopped the clock. Well, LSU's team was not ready when they came back from that flag, lined up and ready to go as soon as the referee set the ball. And they were all just kind of standing around. Well, then they tried to get down, and in 1 second, of course, the clock ran out, and he threw the ball up in the air, and they had to review it. Because they called it a touchdown first, and then after they reviewed it, they saw that the 1 second had run off the clock, and they, you know, it was an interesting ending to a game.
Well, I mean, and the, you know, and of course the fallout was you know, losing right there at the end like he did earlier in the year and losing that game at the last second when he shouldn't have cost Les Miles his job.
Oh, that one cost him. He's done.
No, I mean, it's officially he's done. It became official about an hour ago.
What?
Yeah, they fired him. Les Miles has been fired as head coach as of about an hour ago. That came from the Baton Rouge Advocate.
Wow, I've been out in a dove field. I didn't know anything about it. Yeah, nice news.
Hey, Rocky, did Michigan win?
Michigan?
Sorry to throw it. I mean, and I'm talking the college football team, you know. I didn't get to watch. Did they
pounded
win?
Pounded Penn State. Pounded Penn State.
Yeah, they killed them.
That's awesome. And,
for everybody out there listening.
I know you're going to find this hard to believe, though, Brad. I have been following Michigan. That's one of the Big Ten teams that I have been following, them and Ohio State, just because I think that those are the two – whoever wins that rivalry game at the end of the year, I think that's who's going to the playoff. One of those teams going to the playoff, and I think it's going to be Michigan.
Well, I heard that they are going to play them at Michigan, and when you get that big stadium rocking, it's just nuts.
Amen.
I was born and raised in Michigan for 36 years, so I'm so pleased that the two, Michigan State and Michigan's doing so well, and living now in Oklahoma, where it's college football central, it seems like here, I just have so much fun with my coworkers. And I'd be like, Michigan State's in the top 10? Michigan's in the top 10? We're usually really good in hockey, but not good in college football. You know,
not consistently anyway. And by the way,
exactly.
I take a moment for our listeners here and introduce everybody. If you don't know him, Brad Albeck, our friend, is, of course, an outfitter in Oklahoma. Brad moved there from Michigan. He runs Albeck Adventures out in western Oklahoma. I've had the pleasure of hunting with Brad on numerous occasions. And, does a fantastic job and is probably one of the most knowledgeable waterfowlers that I know because he started out in the Mississippi Flyway and now lives in the Central Flyway. And Brad, I tell you, I feel really lucky to have you on here with us today because it's been a whole lot of talk over the last year or two, three, four, about shifts in the migration and, you know, the cat's out of the bag, Oklahoma and Kansas used to be two of the best kept secrets out there, but they're not anymore when it comes to duck hunting.
Well, I mean, we've been shooting a bunch of birds the last couple of years, Jay Paul. And, you know, they started planting a lot more grain crops here, the milo and corn. They're irrigating more with the center spigots. And even though it's hotter than Hades all summer long, they're still producing some good crops. And I believe and the Mississippi Flyway has shifted a little bit into the central. You know, what I love about my state of Oklahoma is, I mean, pros and cons, we don't have refuges with food in them. And that's, I think, is a very big key to our success because the birds have to fly on out to feed every day. They can't just sit in that flooded corn and these big duck clubs and private refuges like you guys have from Illinois to Arkansas.
Yeah, and I think that's a very valid point. I mean, one of the contrasts between Tennessee and Arkansas and Oklahoma is, you know, for instance, here in my home state of Tennessee, right here in my home county, White's Lake Refuge and Lake Lauderdale and Lake Isom, they all have food sources that are planted for the birds. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. 100% believe that the refuges are a good thing because they provide safe haven for the birds and take some of the pressure off of them. But out there in your state of Oklahoma, if I'm understanding you correctly, you're saying that you feel like all the irrigation, the way that farming's improved, the abundance of crops, and the fact that they do not feed them on the refuges, those are the things that are fueling hunter success and causing this migrational shift.
And the lack of hunting pressure, too. I mean, there's no doubt you guys have 20 to 1 from Louisiana all the way up, you know, that whole Mississippi Flyway, compared to Kansas and Oklahoma and into Texas. You know what I mean? But, you know, we do have refuges, but they're water. And, you know, the birds can go there to rest, which everybody, you know, needs birds to rest, or you beat them out of the entire state. But we don't have any food in there. So even though the bird gets to sit there and rest for 24 hours, he still has to come out to eat. And I think that's one of the main keys here in Oklahoma, is that they cannot just sit there and swim up to an ear of corn, or swim up to the buckwheat, or to swim up to the soybeans and sit there for 7 to 10 days and never fly until the state freezes out, and then they flush down into Arkansas and get mass slaughtered. You know, I think the Arkansas governor made a deal with the Illinois governor. Hey, plant all these refuges and keep our ducks coming, and let's just let them sit in your state for 40 days. And then when it gets cold, they come right down into Arkansas, and we have a heyday. To get well, you know, that's day, Paul.
Yeah, and that's a good point about the birds having to move. And obviously, you feel like the refuges, as far as giving them rest and taking pressure off, are a key also to hunter success.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, I mean, you can't have everybody taking pot shots at anything, you know, all over any state. I mean, from the north to the south. But, you know, just give them the water, or, you know, take half of your big lake and zone it off as refuge, and then make them come out to eat. You know, even though the birds will come out and feed the last 30 minutes, and they may stay in your field all night long and feed, you know, with the full moon and stuff like that, I pulled into fields and just had thousands of mallards jump up and almost hit my bumper when I'm pulling in there in the morning. You know, that will slow down our week of hunting, you know, with a full moon. But you got to make them fly to kill them, boys.
Well, Brad, look, I am a I don't know anything about the hunting in Oklahoma. I don't know how you guys do it, besides what a little bit I've seen on, I guess, when J. Paul hunted with you on Migration Nation.
Yes, sir.
So let's just pretend I'm coming out there. I'm a client coming out to hunt with you. And on a 3 or 4 day hunt, or 5 day, if I'm staying with you a long period of time, let's say 4 or 5 days. In a 4 or 5 day period, what could I expect to hunt to have success in hunting with you?
If you just come with me, you better have a case of shells if you're coming for 5 days, because we'll probably be running 2 a days. We'll just hunt in the morning, and then come on in, eat a burger, drop trailers, and go to a different part of the state and set up and run about 15, 20 dozen full-body mallards and turn on about 15 spinners and watch these mallards come out of the ozone. And you know, over here in the central, it is a, you know, 5 mallard instead of 4, like in the Mississippi. And then we have our kicker birds with pintails, widgeons, and some teal. We mainly are little geese killers. You know, there's 17 subspecies to Canadian goose. We call them little geese. We call them chickens. The best way to describe it is, you know, your big northern flight mallard, times that by 1.5 and put him in a Halloween costume like a goose. His bill is maybe an inch and a half long. You can grab 10 of them in 2 handfuls.
Halloween costume.
Yeah, well, the little guys, they barely even honk. They fly like a snow goose, but they come to a call like a Canadian, and they come in big wads. These little geese do, or cacklers, lessers, you know, Richardsons, but they are just a hoot to shoot. They're very similar to a snow goose. You know, it doesn't take much to bring one down, so we like to shoot them with 20 gauges. And we just love decoying, I mean, just large amount of waterfowl. I mean, if we were back home in Michigan and Illinois, and we had 200 to 2,000 Canadian geese come in our, you know, into our decoys, if you would have shot them, they would have ran you out on a rail. You know, you would have just ruined that, educated all those birds. Well, being down here in the wintering grounds, we'll cut into 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 birds in a whack and not think twice about it. Well, some of the fields will hold 40,000, 50,000, 60,000 Canadian geese in a quarter section, which is 160 acres. And if it's wheat, Rocky, they'll turn it to dust in 3 days. It'll be dirt. They are just like locusts in Kansas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, that's how the snow geese are over here. I mean, the snow geese will.
It's very similar to the damage what the snow geese do over in your guys' part. You know, they'll eat out all the food for the ducks, like in Arkansas. That, you know, if you guys had, you know, just put some water on a rice field and the snows move in, you know, you guys can barely beat them off. Correct. It's very similar to here with the Canadians. You would have fun, Rocky. That's the bottom line. We always have fun. We have good hunts. We have bad hunts. But we always have fun doing it.
Hey, Brad. Let me ask you this. How many years have you been over there now?
I've been living in Oklahoma about 14 years. I came down with a pickup truck full of clothes due to the big auto crash when everybody what was it? 3 million people left Detroit in 2 months.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, look, in 14 years, have you been duck hunting and goose hunting that whole time in Oklahoma?
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you this.
Go ahead.
This is something that interests me, and I know the people that are listening to this podcast, I know that it interests them. Because we're seeing less and less numbers in this part of the Mississippi flying way. And from what you're hearing from people is one of the things that you're hearing is that migration is, you touched on it a little bit earlier, but it is shifting west a little bit towards you guys. And I want to ask you, just from a historical perspective in your mind, have you seen the number of birds grow in that 14 years from the first year you were there till now?
I do believe it's gotten less each year.
Wow.
And slowly but surely it's shrinking. I think, you know, if I still want to continue waterfowling, I always laugh because I said about 10 more years I'll be in New Mexico. Because once again, they're learning how to irrigate crops. And, I mean, look at Lubbock, Texas. You know, they hit a little slump due to the drought about 5 years ago. It looked like moon craters out here, Rocky. I mean, we had one lake that was 27 feet down, and it kept going down.
And it's dry now?
Every year. Huh? No. Thank you. The last 2 years, we've got back our water table to normal. But, you know, like I'd say 7 years ago, even Western Texas, you know, Lubbock, Texas, those outfitters, they were struggling because they had no water due to the drought. Now that we got water, you'll start seeing Western Texas spring back up. And, you know, you got to have water and waterfall.
Yeah, you know, you just made a really interesting point there, too. We've talked a lot here on the podcast in the past about what's happening with the birds and stuff. And, you know, we've mentioned on numerous occasions, you hear frequently in the South guys say things like, boy, they're really feeding the birds up north, and we've done a lot to debunk that myth. But then you also hear people say, well, you know, the counts aren't accurate, and I don't believe that we're 50% above the long-term average as far as the overall population of ducks, because we're not seeing them like we used to see them in Mississippi or Louisiana or Tennessee or Arkansas. But you just pointed out another thing that helps debunk that, because it is a myth. What you don't see if you only hunt in the Mississippi flyway is the bigger picture. And in the bigger picture, what's happening is we're having farming trends change across the country. We've discussed no-till versus traditional tilling practices. And you've just pointed out, look at what's happened in New Mexico, Colorado, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Texas over the last decade. You know, when you fly over those flyover states, from the air, it's very obvious that irrigation is everywhere now. It wasn't that way 10, 15 years ago. You could fly over Oklahoma, you could fly over Western Texas, New Mexico, and you didn't see the circles on the ground that you do now. You know, the center pivots weren't there. But as irrigation has become so prevalent through those central flyway states, it has increased crop production. And with more food, what we have today is birds that are much more widely scattered than they were 15 years ago. Would you agree with that, Brad?
Oh, definitely. A mile block
for
35. Yes, sir.
I'm going to ask you this because there's a lot of people that have traveled out there or are going to travel out there to Oklahoma to hunt. Let me ask you this from a hunter's perspective that grew up hunting in Mississippi. What is the difference you would say that the calling tech is there any difference in the calling technique for somebody that grew up hunting in the flooded swamp cypress of Mississippi for when I'm coming out there to hunt in Oklahoma?
Are you talking ducks?
Yes, sir. Ducks.
In the swamp. Get a loud call because it's very windy here. And you got to really hit them hard and really bark at them really loud. And we're not much of a feed chuckle group down here. It's usually a high ball and quacks all the way to the ground.
Wow, that's pretty interesting. Yeah. I knew before I asked the question that you had to be louder because I mean you're hunting those fields and you're gonna have to bark at those ducks that are up there pretty high. But you know that's pretty interesting that it's mostly hail calling and loud quacks. So
you got to keep them interested. You know, all the way down to the ground.
Yeah, and I want to interject something here too because I've been out there and I've hunted there several times. I can tell you this, last year or year before last, we went and hunted for several days with Brad. You can kill 5 mallards. You can kill 8 Canada geese per day. And I will go on record right now and say this, and it's not just to push. Matter of fact, I'd really rather keep it as a secret, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've been to Canada, to Saskatchewan, Manitoba, Alberta numerous times. If I had to choose, I'll take Oklahoma over Canada, hands down. It's an easy drive from anywhere in West Tennessee or Mississippi. It's not difficult to get there. The weather has been great just about every time that I've been there. You can kill just as many birds. Yep, gorgeous. Just as many birds in Oklahoma as you can kill in Canada. And I'll probably go back to Canada one of these days. But, I mean, there's really no reason when you've got Oklahoma. It is totally a different world out there, and the bag limits are very liberal. Hunting pressure's not bad. Brad, if somebody wanted to go out there and hunt with you, it's a little different than hunting in the Delta. Tell us what they could expect as far as the way you're going to go after the birds. You know, here we're going to be either standing next to a tree if we're in green timber or usually sitting in a duck blind or in a pit if we're hunting a field. Tell people what they can expect if they come out there to hunt with you.
Well, you know, we pick up and rip down every single day. And since we're hunting such a large population of geese, we have to run a very large spread. pardon me. So doing that, we like to take larger groups of hunters, anywhere from, you know, the single hunter, and we'd put you in other groups, but we'd like about, you know, 12 to 16 guns. We'd pull into a private field. Usually can drive most of the time into the fields with our trucks and trailers. We've had agreements with our farmers to let us do that on most occasions, unless the weather is bad and we're not going to bury trucks. But, St. Paul, I mean, you've seen us. We ran 125 dozen full bodies, silhouettes, and we put them out. And, you know, if the trailer comes in first, we open it up and start slapping down the blinds side by side for safety. And then a couple of guys will jump in a truck and go across the field and you know, pick a pickup truck full of Johnson grass and blend that in, you know, so we have just a solid mat blinds. And then we'll run a pattern out there. We'll pull in the next truck and trailer, open up the back doors, put two or three people in there, turn on the lights, drive a pattern, and the only thing you do is walk behind the trailer and set up decoys about 5 foot, you know, right behind the trailer. The trailer's rolling, and you can set up a huge spread in 45 minutes, you know, everybody helping. Same thing after we get done killing our birds. We pull the trailer back out, and you just chuck the decoys right in the trailer. Just walk right behind the trailer, pick it up, throw it in the car. It's easy.
And that's yeah. Dry field hunting, isn't it, Brad? All
yes,
so,
sir.
Look, I've seen pictures of, I guess it's what we call creeks here, you know, just small. Do you hunt any flooded areas yourself?
Well, you know, we have watersheds to control the flooding here. When it does rain, it floods up pretty good. But flooded timber, you have to almost go to the east side of the state, and they call it the green tree area, stuff like that. But, I mean, there isn't – it's flat, it's dry, and, you know, you just got to get around these giant watersheds that are holding these birds. So when they come out to eat, you got them. You know,
hey Brad, let me ask you this, because
yes, sir.
Do you get into the cranes? Do you guys hunt any cranes?
Well, we got our buddies, the Crane Wreckers, and Jay Paul's record. Jay Paul come on down and was doing some filming, and I almost broke his record. I had four in my group. I took my 81-year-old dad. And we killed 53 cranes by 10:30 in the morning.
But I still got the record, baby.
Yeah, but Jay Paul, I killed my birds and I cased my gun. I sat back and I was laughing watching these guys shoot these birds.
Man, it is amazing, too. If you've never done it, sandhill crane hunting ought to be on everybody's bucket list. And I want to point out two things right quick. Rocky, you ask him about the cranes, and Brad does occasionally get into the cranes over there in his part of Oklahoma. But Brad's talking about right now hunting with our buddies Monty Beck and Brian Baker of Crane Wreckers. And I'll tell you, one of the things I really admire about you as a guide, Brad, you know that you're not, you know, the end all to everything, and when I wanted to go and hunt cranes, I asked Brad about it, and he said, man, I'll be more than happy to take you on a crane hunt, and you can probably kill some cranes with us, but if you want to really, really get into cranes, you need to call these guys. Wear them out.
Beat them up.
Wear them out. And he put me on Brian Baker and Monty of Crane Wreckers, and we put 18 guys in the field, which a lot of people would never believe you can do that with cranes, but you can. They proved it. And we all 18 limited out with our three birds, killed 54 cranes that day, and set the record. And, man, Oklahoma crane hunting, it was amazing. And, you know, we're going to have Brian on here next week to give us some general information about cranes and to talk to us a little bit about the crane hunting there in their part of Oklahoma. But the other thing that I wanted to point out right quick here is you've talked a lot about shooting Canada geese and the little geese, but, you know, so everybody knows, I mean, you wear the ducks out too.
Yes, sir. We get after those ducks. You know, shooting geese for 30 straight days, and especially ripping into those large flocks, they're going to get smart. Our goose hunting usually falls, teeters off about mid-January. But then, man, you know, we're too busy goose hunting, and, you know, we goose hunt in the morning, and then we drive in the afternoon to try to find birds, you know, to get ready for the next morning goose hunt. Well, with doing that, it lets our ducks that are moving in, you know, all our private land, you know, nobody can hunt it except us. The ducks will start coming out to feed, Jay Paul, but, you know, just like any place else, it gets shooting hours, 2-3 minutes, okay, let's stop, and then out comes the ducks, right? to feed. Well, with us not shooting at them for 30 days, instead of 6 o'clock, they start coming out at 5:45. A couple of days later, they come out at 5:30, Jay Paul. Pretty soon, they start coming out at 4:30. Man, some days they start coming out at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Clouds of them, 30,000, 20,000 mallards, feeding at in the middle of hunting season at 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a bright blue sky day. And then we'll start to duck hunt. And we'll just beat them back. And but I like to duck hunt in a little bit smaller groups. You know, in that 7 to 8, you know, guys in a field, that's a pretty good hunt. And then, you know, ducks are unlike our geese, where we can keep the heat on them and beat them up day after day. Ducks will get a little finicky, and they'll shift to a different field, and we'll burn a field. So then, therefore, we have to, you know, have 2 or 3, 4 good feeds all over the state and keep bouncing around and then let those birds rest. But I'll tell you what, if we shoot them at 4 o'clock, you know, 3 days later, you better set your watch to 4:20 and be ready, because it kind of keeps pushing them back to darker and darker, you know.
Yeah, yeah, but I did want to point that out, because there are a lot of guys that really aren't as crazy about shooting the geese as the ducks. And, you know, you're going to get them on ducks some, and if you really want to get into the ducks, you need to do it later in the season. I know we've kept you on here for quite some time today, Brad, but before you have to go, tell us, if a guy wants to come to Oklahoma, and I would highly recommend, if you're going to go, this is the guy that you go with. And I'm not saying that to patronize him, or because Brad Albeck is on our guest on the show today. I mean, I've seen it. I've lived it. It's a fact. 100 bird days are not the exception. They, a lot of times, are the norm out there. If a guy wants to come and hunt with you, how does he get in touch with you? How would he go about booking?
Well, the easiest way is just pick up the phone and call me. My telephone number is 405-443-8762. Or you can just type in Brad Albeck on Google, or Albeck's Adventures, and see our ads. And we'd love to have everybody come out to Oklahoma and experience this.
Well, I'll tell you, I'll definitely be back out there with you again. And want to remind everybody that this segment of the podcast has been brought to you by Hardcore Brands and Hardcore Decoys. Hardcore makes the most innovative and durable hunting products out there. The new 2017 line is about to debut, and the new website, hardcore-brands.com, is coming up this week also. Check out our friends at Hardcore. They know it's not easy being hardcore. Man, Brad, thank you so much for being here with us, and I hope you'll stick around for a few more minutes as we move on to the close. Rocky, you got a dog question, I think, for me, so why don't you let her rip?
Yeah, we had a question come in that I thought was pretty interesting, because both of my last two labs that I've had and used in my guide service were, they started in the field pretty early. And this Duck South user wanted to know, at what age is it appropriate to take the dog to the field with you? And not so much in he's expecting to have the dog trained at that age, but just to be in the field with the hunter.
You know, man, that's a hard question to answer. If you do it right, I mean, you can take a 10-week-old puppy into the field. Here's the thing, yeah. Rocky, that everybody needs to know. When you're taking a dog for the first time into the field hunting, you need to make sure that you bring that dog into a situation that he's ready for. I mean, I've hunted with Brad, for instance, with 15 guys out there, all shoulder to shoulder in layout blinds. And when a group of 200 Canada geese or 300, a tornado of 300 mallards comes into that field and Brad yells, cut them, and you got 15 guys that all raise up and unload their gun, taking a dog, a young dog that doesn't have any experience into that situation could be a recipe for disaster. You know, on the flip side of that, if you've got, you know, 5-month-old pup, that you're just wanting to be around it and see it, and that dog's been already really, really exposed to gunfire, and you know that all those guys jumping up and shooting are not going to have a negative effect on that dog. You just want him to have that experience, and hey, you know, take him to the field. But in that case, I would want him in the blind with me. I wouldn't want him where he could run around. I wouldn't want to even be shooting. I just want to have the dog out there for the experience. I mean, I've taken 4- and 5-month-old puppies out into the field and sat away from the other hunters just to, you know, gradually introduce them to it, let them hear the gunshots, see the bird, maybe go out, play with the bird with them a little bit after the hunt, or maybe if they seem really comfortable with the shooting, move on in closer. So just, you know, you could take a 10-week-old puppy to the duck blind with you if you wanted to, but make sure that you're not going to make that dog gun shy by just bringing him right in there and letting everybody unload their guns. And also, you don't want the dog to develop bad habits. You don't want to take a 5-month-old untrained puppy out there into the field with you and not have any control over him and let the dog, you know, start breaking right away and think that that's what part of hunting is about. So how early, there really isn't a definitive answer to that. The better answer is take the dog as early as you want, but use common sense. Make sure that the situation that you're taking your dog into, you have already done the groundwork to have him prepared, so it's not going to have a negative impact on that dog for the future. In other words, use common sense.
You know, I probably worded that wrong. I probably said that question wrong, because I could have worded it better in saying, when is it good to introduce your dog, not with a group of other hunters or a mixed group, but when would it be good to introduce your dog to hunting, just say you and a father and son going out? And that was my mess up.
Yeah, much better. Brad's just laughing his butt off in the background there, too, because he knew what you meant, and I didn't, and he's laughing at my long-winded response. Okay.
But so very good answer, Dave Paul. I was right there with you on that answer.
Thank you, brother. All right, let me reshape that now that the question's been reshaped. That's a much better question. If you're going to do it right, then start them early. I mean, you know, I've seen guys have a 10, 12-week-old pup with them out there. You know, one of the best examples of this that I ever saw was a guy came to hunt with me a couple of years ago. And I wasn't filming at the time. I was actually hunting with a buddy and invited him to come along. He said, you know what, man, I'd love to come. How many of us is going to be? And I said, it's just going to be, you know, 3 of us out there. Feel free to bring your son along with you if you want to also. And he said, no, I'm going to bring my pup, and I may not even bring my gun. And he came out, and he shot around the pup. He had the week before, on a Wednesday afternoon, taken his puppy to the local gun club, and he had started out at the end of the driveway while they were shooting clay pigeons at the trap range and playing with him with the dummy. And then he kept getting closer and closer and closer to the trap houses until finally he was standing, you know, behind the line watching him rake clay pigeons with that dog. And then the next week he comes and he hunts with me, and he just sat there holding the pup in his arms most of the time, letting us shoot birds. And then he took a till that we killed and played with the puppy a little bit. And you know, I was very, very impressed with the common sense approach that he took, because earlier that dog has turned into a tremendous animal because he was brought along the right way. So I don't really think, you know, that you can do anything too early as long as you bring them into it gradually and you have the correct expectations. Is that a better answer, Rocky?
Yeah, that was a really good answer. This portion of the broadcast is brought to you by Training with J. Paul. Now, J. Paul has a website at trainingwithjpaul.com. If you are training your retriever at home yourself, you can go on there. J. Paul has loads of videos and written content that you can learn and teach your retriever at home by yourself. Now, J. Paul, the most favorite part on the website is Ask J. Paul. Click that button, type in your question. Within 24 to 48 hours, J. Paul will usually respond back to you with his answers. Now, all podcast users and Duck South users, you can type in On the X in the discount code. You'll get 1 month free. Anyway, just try it out. Trainingwithjpaul.com.
Man, I appreciate that shameless plug for me, Rocky. Brad, jump in here. You had something you wanted to say just then.
Well, Rocky, we would really like you to come on down and experience some of this Oklahoma goose hunting if you get a chance. Our best time of the season is we come off of our split December 10th, and we'll be rocking and rolling until the end of January. So if you got any free time, please pick up the phone, call me, and remind me who you are, and we'll have you come on down to camp and eat and drink and shoot a bunch of birds.
You know, Brad, one cool thing that Brad will be – I might as well go on and say it now, because by the time this podcast comes out, most of you will know about it anyway. But Brad is joining our professional guide reports on Duck South that's called the Guides Roundtable at Allbeck Adventures. So you'll be getting a report and hearing about it, Allbeck Adventures, all season long. So – and I think that'll be probably one of the most listened to reports every week. And we appreciate you doing that, Mr. Allbeck.
Well, you're glad to be a part of the team and glad to help out other hunters, you know.
Well,
Mr.
we Allbeck, hadn't told.
Mr. Allbeck, Brad, did your dad join the conversation?
He asked me the other day, how many more days till we get to shoot some geese? And I was like, Dad, you're not 82. When are you going to hang up them spurs? But he still loves hunting, J. Paul. God, I hope I have that much fire when I or be alive at 82.
Amen. I just thought it was funny, Rocky, calling you Mr. Allbeck just then. Well, man, Mr. Allbeck, it's been great having you. You know, before we close it out here, we always have some final thoughts, and so I'm going to give you, since you're our guest this week, Brad, anything you'd like to add here before we shut her down?
No, I'm fine. I'm just glad to be a part and enjoy talking hunting to anybody at any time, you know. But
yeah,
I appreciate
we love
the opportunity.
Having you with us. Yeah, and I tell you, Brad can talk hunting with anybody anytime. He is extraordinarily knowledgeable guy. Rocky, how about you, brother?
Brad, I want to thank you for coming on and teaching us a little bit about waterfowling in the state of Oklahoma. And I guess my final thought for the day is, if you post something to Facebook, we already know that you like it because you posted it, so you don't have to like your own post. So that's my rant of the day.
And you know
I get going so far so fast, Rocky. I'm usually driving 80 miles per hour, and I'm either going down I-40 or up I-35, and I am. And it's dangerous, and people shouldn't do it. But I have a 2004 old Tundra pickup truck with 260,000. I don't have all this fancy on voice command and all that. And Rocky, you'd actually laugh at my iPhone because it's the original one. And I'm surprised that the battery even lasted this long today. But usually when I'm driving, I'm just pushing buttons, and I really don't know what I'm liking or reading half the time. And if you know me, my spelling is terrible because I'm thinking it and driving and hitting it with my fingers. I'm just glad I haven't been in an accident yet, buddy.
No, Brad, that wasn't pointed out. That wasn't pointed towards you at all. I was relaxing at my family's house, and I was actually looking at Facebook, and I saw where a couple of people had liked their own post, and I'm like, okay, we know you like it. You posted it. I hope that if you didn't like it, you wouldn't post it. So, anyway. That's my rant of the day.
Yeah, but you just obviously hit a nerve with our buddy Brad there. Actually, Brad, I'm looking at your Facebook right now. You don't like your own stuff. So I haven't found one on here where you posted you actually liked it yourself. And, you know, for me, I've always wondered about that too, Rocky. Why someone does that? Why someone, you know, makes a post and then likes their own post? To me, that seems just a little bit narcissistic. And I'm probably a hypocrite to say that, you know, the guy who loves to hear himself talk, but I'm with you there on that. Well, guys, it's been great having you all today. I'm going to shut her down now. I want to point out to everybody here in the South listening that, you know, it's still 2 months away for duck season for us, but there are a whole lot of places where duck season is about to begin. If you want to try something different, again, I would highly suggest you call up my buddy Brad and head out to Oklahoma. We're going to be joined on our podcast during the week this week by another guy like Brad that not only is an outfitter, but he's one of the most knowledgeable people that I've ever met when it comes to waterfowling. He literally chases them from Canada to Louisiana every year. Matt Schauer of Northern Skies Outfitters is going to be with us on our midweek podcast. So I hope everybody will back and listen to that one on Thursday. Thank you so much for being with us on this edition of the On the X podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.